Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello and welcome back to the show. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hello, Tay. Doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Do you have anything good to drink this week?
Well, only Propels and coffees. We're observing dry January.
Oh, you're doing it too. I knew Mom was.
Yeah. Well, I you know, she's the one that forces me into wet weekends sometimes. So I don't mind tagging along on a dry January. That's all right with me.
Oh wow! And wow, congratulations on that.
And it makes it easier on her because you know.
Sure.
So, you know, otherwise have somebody drinking there. Oh, this is tasty. Ah, oh, too bad you're not drinking. Oh, yeah. That's sorry for your luck.
That's fair. That's good. That's good. That's supportive of you.
Yeah.
So. Kudos to anybody out there doing Dry January. I've done it a few times. I don't know. I feel like I was doing it every year up until the pandemic. And then it just that first January of, I guess that was 2021 because we got 2020 January. It was fine. That was, we were still up and rolling then. But that first January in the pandemic, I was like, no, not this one. Nope.
Yep. No, I remember that. Yeah, I remember that. But everybody needed extra drinks in.
Yeah, you know, and however you got through it. What matters is you got through it. Well, good for you, though.
All right. Well, how about you?
Did I have anything interesting this week? There's a bar a restaurant in Williamsburg called Strange Ways, and I had an espresso martini there. I thought you would be interested to hear this story.
Oh, yeah.
It was an espresso martini, but they have theirs on draft.
On draft?
Yeah.
Wow.
They pre-batch it, and I think it might be on a nitro line, which would make sense because that would add that sort of that frothiness, the head that you get like on a Guinness, you know.
Was it like that?
It is. It gets a real nice like froth on it, and I mean it doesn't taste carbonated at all, but it's just really rich and aerated, and it's so good.
Yeah.
It's also, I always feel bad unless a bar is like very like much advertising, like we do espresso martinis, I don't feel comfortable ordering them because I know how much work goes into it.
Yeah.
But when I know that they just pull a little thing and like, oh, there it is. It's great. I love that. Like, I know I am actually asking you for something that's so easy, and that makes me feel so much less stress.
I'm afraid that would be too easy for me. If I see them doing them that way, and they're really good, they would go down fast.
Oh, yeah. I know, and they only serve them in, like, the little coupes, so I'm sure if you were there, you'd be like, yeah, just give me a pint.
Yeah, it's like when I order the Guinness. Yeah, I order two at a time. I'd do the same thing with this.
What's the cost to make that look like a Guinness in a pint glass?
Yeah, could you just use a Guinness pint glass and fill that up for me?
I don't know if that's legal, but they are very good. I don't know. It's I don't have any connection to that place, but I've been there a few times, and that's just the only thing I ever get because it's just so good. So if you're in Williamsburg, Strange Ways, it's good. The food's good too.
Okay, well, I have to keep that in mind the next time I come visit you.
No, absolutely. I was worried because I hadn't been there since last summer when espresso martinis were very big. I'm like, oh man, I can't imagine they'd take that off the menu. But what if they did? And I asked, I was like, you won't ever take this off. And the guy was like, I don't think so. I was like, good.
Yeah, that's my go-to drink now. I love them.
Yeah. Well, so for this this episode, it came about by I've been doing some bartending videos on the TikToks, and I made a drink with grapefruit juice in it, and somebody commented like, "Hey, don't drink grapefruit juice if you're on certain medications." Which I'm not a doctor, but I've heard that anymore, so that's true. But it made me think, like, oh, well, you know, I know a cocktail that tastes like grapefruit juice, like strikingly like grapefruit juice, but involves no grapefruit. And I thought we could talk about that this week. And that drink is called the Jasmine.
The Jasmine.
Yep.
Not the jazz man, huh?
No, it's the Jasmine, like the flower or the Disney princess. Now, structurally, it is an ounce and a half gin, a quarter of Campari, quarter of Cointreau, and three-quarter lemon. Shake, strain, serve with either a grapefruit or a lime. And you can kind of see just in the ingredients why it would taste like grapefruit, right? Because it's got a strong bitter in the Campari. Mm-hmm. It's got acids. It's got citrus. It's got all the flavor elements of grapefruit just sort of broken down.
And see, that right off the bat, I would say that's probably not a drink for me because I don't like grapefruit juice.
It's
like bitter on the back end or something when you drink. I'm just talking about plain grapefruit juice, not even a drink. Yeah.
Well, and that is, I mean, it is very much not a drink for everybody. I think if you like grapefruit juice, you would like this drink, but it plays very tart. It plays very dry. It is not a sweet drink. You know, a lot of people will kind of get fussy with it and try to balance it, like add a little bit more sweetness. But I think the point of the drink is that it tastes like grapefruit.
I remember when I was young, my Uncle Marvin and Aunt Anna, they lived in Tampa, Florida. And they lived in just a regular suburban neighborhood, but they had like five or six fruit trees in their yard that bore oranges on some of them and grapefruits on other ones. And I mean, big, beautiful looking ones. The grapefruits, I mean, they probably weighed 5 pounds. They were so big. And we would go out and pick some and bring them in for them to fix for breakfast in the morning, either juice oranges for orange juice or cut up the grapefruits and have those. And I remember how excited I was. Man, this fresh fruit, I'm going to try this. I didn't like either one of them.
Well, you've never been a fan of things that aren't, what, meat?
But yeah, true. Well, I like potatoes.
I would say a potato can roll with you.
I've never met a meat or a potato I didn't like. But,
hey,
but
that's all right. That's your palate.
But these look so good, you know, because they were fresh picked right off the tree and you cut them open and, you know, they're star shaped inside, kind of like, you know, the sections in it and everything. And I thought, man, that looks good. I could not stand them. Put sugar all over them, trying to make them taste better with sugar. It still didn't help.
I mean, eating like straight grapefruit, I do now, but I still will always put like a little bit of sugar or a little bit of honey on there. A little bit of Ango and sugar on a grapefruit tastes great.
Oh, yeah.
A little bartending meal trick. So to the Jasmine. You know, I've never really looked into the history of the drink before. It was weirdly one of the first drinks I learned back even before I was bartending. I just, like, a bartender showed it to me, and I was like, that seems cool. I like the name, and it's pink. And I learned it. But I did some digging into its background, and, you know, it's a fairly new cocktail. It's what we call a modern classic, this one specifically being invented in 1992. So this cocktail was created by a bartender by the name of Paul Harrington at the Townhouse Bar and Grill in Emeryville, California. So the story goes, Harrington's friend from college was visiting him at his bar and asked him to make him something he'd never made before. So Harrington had just made, for a different customer, an older classic cocktail, something called a Pegu Club. We'll come back to that. And that cocktail is gin, Cointreau, lime, and Angostura. So he just riffed on that a bit, just sort of did a twist on it. And he kept the Cointreau and gin, but then he subbed in some Campari for the bitters and some lemon for the lime. And then the name, well, that's just simple explanation. His friend's name was Matt Jasmine. So the Jasmine was named in his honor. And it was a hit there. It, you know, spread around the West Coast. It worked its way east, and it really got a boost in popularity when it became the signature drink at the Bellagio in Las Vegas' restaurant of the same name, Jasmine, in 1998.
Yeah, and one of the things about it that he didn't find out until later after the drink is kind of out there and everybody had latched on is he spelled it just like Jasmine with an E at the end, and come to find out his friend, the name is spelled without an E at the end. So he named it after his friend, but he spelled his friend's name wrong. So he must not have been that good of a friend if he didn't know how his name was spelled.
I feel like you would have made that, even if he knew, you would have made that choice. Like, aesthetically, just calling it the Jasmine is a better name.
And he was working at that bar at the time. He'd graduated from college, and he was working at that bar because he was having to pay on his student loans, his college debt that he was paying on. That's why he was working there. But he continued after that to follow his dreams, and he became an architect. And today he lives in Spokane with his wife and two children, and he's the owner of a bar restaurant in Spokane called The Clover.
Oh, nice. Well, good. Congratulations, Mr. Harrington. You lived a successful life so far.
Yeah, you followed your dream there, you know.
I mean, jack of all trades. I mean, adding a cocktail that will exist in perpetuity in like classic cocktail history, and then you just go and have a whole other career after that. Like a lot of bartenders work their whole career and don't make anything that sticks. That's normal. That's not a failure. That's pretty normal. So
yeah,
for him to come out of the gate just like, oh, you know, just added something to the lexicon of bartending for the ages. I'm gonna try something else now. Pretty cool.
I wonder if he ever regrets not naming it after himself. Because now somebody else's name is out there instead of it could have been the Harrington. You know?
No, because I think part, and this is, I feel like there's just a perfect storm that has to happen to make something that sticks. And it's got to be simple. It's got to be something that other bars can easily replicate. And the name has to be almost just as good as the drink, you know? Like, like I don't know if I would want, like, it's a beautiful, like, light pink drink, you know, when you've got the slice of lime in there, beautiful pop of contrast with grapefruit. It's just, it's a beautiful looking drink. And the jasmine fits. If it was the Harrington, the Harrington sounds like something that should be served with, like, a cigar in, like, a rocks glass. Harrington. But the jasmine, it looks like a jasmine, and that just makes sense.
I don't know. The Harrington would probably come in a rocks glass with a gun or something like that.
Well, okay. I mean, so that's the Remington, Dad. Get your classics right.
I'll have a Harrington click, click, boom.
Oh, no. No, the jasmine is very much, it. You look at it and it's like, yeah, that's a jasmine. But, you know, again, like it's an aggressively dry drink, tastes very grapefruity. But I wanted to circle back to that other cocktail, the one I mentioned that Harrington was inspired by partially, and that was the Pegu Club. Because there's also a lot of really cool cocktail history there. You know, we're sort of a tale of two cocktails today.
It dovetailed out. It was one thing, and then it became another.
Yeah. So that original cocktail, which the modern specs, the ones that you'd run into now in a bar, are like 1.5 ounces of gin, 3/4 ounce curacao, like 1/4 ounce, or sometimes as quarter as a teaspoon, lime juice, some bitters, usually ango. It's shaken, it's served up. And it kind of has, it's basically a gin daisy. And similar to the jasmine, it's very dry. It plays very dry. This drink is much older than the jasmine. It gets its name from its birthplace, a bar called the Pegu Club. Well, I guess actually a club called the Pegu Club. It was a gentleman's club. It was in Rangoon, Burma at the time, now Yangon, Myanmar. That was built in 1880 during the British colonial occupation.
I bet they had a good crab dish with it, too. Crab Rangoon.
Oh, I don't think that I don't. This is not a food history show, but I'm almost positive that has no historical accuracy.
Oh, I was gonna say they had the drink and the snack to go along with it, appetizer.
I don't know. So the Pegu Club, the club, was named after the nearby Pegu River, and this club sort of catered to British Army or British Navy officers who were frequented the establishment and were, you know, living in the area at the time. And the drink was created there to sort of be the Pegu Club's signature beverage. It was perfect for, like, the hot climate, you know, being very dry and bracing and cold and refreshing. It was a hit, and inevitably it made its way back to Europe and then America.
And if you're talking about English maritime people, then gin is your best base drink to pick.
Yeah,
base spirit.
Yeah. The drink, now, a bit of, I think, a conflict in how the drink is actually supposed to be made or how it was made back in the day. So its first printed recipe shows up in a book called The ABCs of Mixing Cocktails, which was printed in 1923. And then it shows up again in a much more well-known tome, which is Harry Craddock's The Savoy Cocktail Club book, which that comes out in 1930. But between those two publications, a very important change happens. So 1923's recipe lists not lime juice, but specifically Rose's lime juice. And what did we learn last week about Rose's lime?
Our old friend from last week. It's a preserved actual lime, but it's sweetened. It's preserved sweet, in sugar. Yeah.
Now, in so the...
It wouldn't
the
19- have been as dry.
Well, that's... Yeah, because by the 1930s book, that the word roses was omitted, and it just said lime juice, making a massive change in that drink.
Whether the guy knew it or not, or whether he got it served wrong or different or something like that, who knows?
Well, and it could have been, you know, the Rose's Sweetened Lime was very much created for the British Navy, so it makes sense that it would be in that original drink that was served to the British Navy at the Pegu Club.
Sure.
But, you know, whether it was a calculated, like, this is a more proper way to make a drink with fresh lime, whether it was just a mistake, it's hard to say. But that second version, that 1930s version with regular lime juice, was the way the drink was made in perpetuity. Long after that, resulting in a very bracingly tart drink. Not too sweet at all.
It could have been a product placement dispute. The guy, the guy writing the book tried to blackmail Rose's and said, I'm just going to put lime juice unless you pay me X number of pounds or whatever.
I can't imagine famed barman Harry Craddock doing that, but you know what? Who knows? It's the Wild West as far as publishing recipes or anything back in the day.
Yeah.
In any case, this 1930s version, this recipe kind of has ebbs and flows in popularity for the next few decades. I mean, along with a lot of classics, you know, we're going through wars and prohibition and all sorts of stuff. And also, like a lot of classics, it falls into relative obscurity, really up until the cocktail revival of the 1990s. So really, the Pegu Club is revived around the time that it's, you know, great and like grandchild, the Jasmine is born.
It's born out of that.
Yeah.
But it's still obscure if you ask me, because I hadn't heard of either one of these drinks.
Well, all right. Well, okay. Obscure if you're not in like...
In the biz.
Cocktail circles.
Yeah.
But you know what? I mean, speaking of the biz, one of the bartenders that really is credited with putting the Pegu Club cocktail back on the map is a New York bar icon, Audrey Saunders, who opened her own Pegu Club in Manhattan in 2005. So she opened a bar called the Pegu Club. And of course, she served Pegu Club cocktails there, along with a lot of other classics. She was actually helped by our old favorite host of Drink Masters, Julie Reiner.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, she pops up in this story. Actually, somebody else pops up in this story. Saunders was a protege of King Cocktail himself, Dale DeGroff.
Well, there you go. They're all connected. They all got it together. And if you called your place the Pegu Club, you better serve the Pegu Club drink.
Yes. And it was really, I mean, the Pegu Club, while it was operating, and especially in its early years, was one of the game changers in the cocktail scene. You know, an entire next generation of prominent bartenders in New York City were all worked in the Pegu Club at some point. It's really just like it's an all-star roster when you look at the bartenders that work there. And I mean, Saunders was an impressive figure herself. I mean, outside of opening an incredibly important seminal cocktail bar, and, you know, training the next generation of amazing bartenders, she invented some modern classics. The Old Cuban and the Gin Mule were her creations. But I think the thing that I'm most thankful for is she's the one that popularized the usage of my personal favorite piece of glassware, the Nicanora.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. That was another something that she sort of breathed life into. It, you know, put it back on the map of like go-to cocktail glassware.
Well, I like drinking my espresso martinis out of my Nicanora. Now, I have been known to fill up my coffee travel cup with espresso martini and drink that, but I like it better out of the Nicanora. I feel classier when I'm doing that.
It's a little classier, just a tiny bit classier.
Yeah, I'm going to put on my dinner jacket, you know, and get a cigar and sip on my espresso martini.
I love Nicanora glasses. And now you see them everywhere, and I just kind of assumed, like, oh, this has always been a drink in, like, fancy cocktail bars. It just doesn't make it that far outside of those. But no, it really, she was that was sort of something that influenced her curiosity about bartending, is actually seeing like the movies that featured those glasses back in the day, and or Nick and Nora, the detective movies, you know. So that was something that she personally brought back. And also, I mean, the Pega Club, it had a very like hands-on experience that was pretty unique. Like, they would provide small bottles of juices or syrups or bitters, so customers could actually tweak their drinks a little bit to their liking, which I cannot. That is
really
such a I don't know. I mean, that's such a chill like offering. Whereas some cocktail bars, you know, the insinuation that you might want a drink a little sweeter or a little drier is like sacrilege. And they're just like, oh yeah, I don't know, here you go. Yeah,
I've never heard of like that.
I've never seen that in practice. But,
yeah, I mean, but I can see where it starts getting you more involved in what makes up a drink. It's one thing to just go in and order a drink and like it. It's another to understand the whole process, not just of like your favorite drink, but of all drinks. And it gives you the freedom to kind of play around with stuff, and it gets you more involved, and maybe it keeps you coming back. Maybe that's a gimmick to keep you coming back too.
Well, and that's something that I feel like, as much as the sort of craft element of craft cocktails has taken off, and now you walk into any bar or restaurant and they've got a craft cocktail menu. And while I like that, a lot of the early bars, their gimmick, not gimmick, the thing that made them unique usually was some level of engagement with customers. I mean, again, going back to Dale DeGroff, he was a personable barman. That was what made what he did so impressive and spread like wildfire around the city. Was not just because of the drinks he was making, it's because he was involved in the making. He was putting on a show for you. And then, you know, you have bars like Milk and Honey that, you know, it was all like there was not a menu per se. You just kind of said what you liked and you got a bespoke drink. That back and forth between bartender and customer were like, oh, what base beer do you like? Do you like sweet? Do you want shaken? Do you want strong? Like, let's arrive at a drink for you. That's an element that I always really love. And it sounds like, you know, in their own way, the Pega Club, that kind of like, this is your drink. It's as you like it. I really love when there's that conversation between the drink and the customer and between the bartender and the customer that takes place.
Yeah, well, I think it's also to the bar's advantage if the people come in there wanting to impress the bartender as far as, you know, they want them to like them. I don't mean impress them, but they want the bartender to like them, as opposed to going in there and treating the bartender like, I'll have one of these, you know, hurry up and get it for me. You know, that it comes in, it's a mutual respect, I think, is what I'm looking for. You kind of like that idea, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes, I don't know, sometimes it feels like a certain bars you go into and it feels sort of like a duel.
Like, yeah.
You know, like the bartender is way too cool and the customer is way too cool. And it's like, oh no, who's going to break first? It's like, what if we, we're nice to each other on both sides? Wouldn't that be cool? And we used our joint knowledge and palates to arrive at delicious, delicious final products. But anyway, you know, it's a bummer. But, you know, sadly, the Pega Club closed in 2020, largely due to COVID. A lot of things going on. Their lease was expiring. They were threatened with a big old rent raise. There were structural issues in their building that would have been incredibly expensive to fix. There's just a whole lot going on that was an unfortunate confluence of events that led to this incredibly seminal, important, beloved, iconic, successful bar closing, which is just heartbreaking.
Yeah, that's too bad. I hated to hear that it no longer existed.
Yeah. I don't know much about this, the details of this, but apparently Audrey Saunders is working on opening some sort of like industry, like bartender's retreat where she's somewhere, I don't know, upstate. It sounds very little information available, but it sounds cool, whatever it is.
Whatever it is, you hope to go there, huh?
Yeah. Do I get to go to like a cabin somewhere with a bunch of other like weird nerdy bartenders and just like talk about botanicals we like? I'll do that. Take my money. But you know, the legacy of the Pega Club lives on, as does the cocktail and its protege, the Jasmine. So that's kind of the, you know, that's a little bit of the bittersweet beauty of the bar world is that the places where these drinks are created, they come and go, they open and close. But when you sort of launch a recipe into history, it lives on. And even if it outlives your establishment, it's always going to bring back, like, we will always come back to the story of the existence of both the original Pegu Club and the Pegu Club here in New York whenever we talk about the Pegu Club cocktail. And that's cool, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it ties it all together.
Yeah.
And then the jasmine sprouted off of it.
Yep.
Just a guy fixing a drink for his college buddy. And just by happenstance, he had served a Pegu Club right before that. So he thought, what the heck? I've been wanting to fool with that drink anyway. I've already got those two bottles in my hand. Let's just go from there.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that happens a lot where it's like no one's ever trying to make a classic when they make a classic. They just make something that's kind of simple. And it almost seems obvious like somebody should have done that before. How did nobody do that before? But it just works. And then it happens. So.
Well, somebody's probably done it, but they didn't have the sense to name it or something or put it in the book.
It's the name, it's the aesthetics, it's putting it in front of the right audience at the right time. It's all those details. But whatever the case, I'm grateful for both recipes. And they both play pretty dry. But, you know, if you got a bottle of Rose's Lime because of the last episode and you want something else to do with it, try subbing in a little bit of that lime juice in a Pegu Club with Rose's Lime, or just adding some to the recipe. It's a very small mm-hmm. drink when you shake it out. So you could add just a half ounce of Rose's to that and it works fine. See how you like it. Great use for a bottle of Rose's Lime.
The other thing you could do to get your drink to be well known is have Hemingway come in and drink it.
That's true. Yes. That is the Where's Waldo of the bar world. Ernest Hemingway. Dale DeGroff might have taught you, and Ernest Hemingway might have consumed your drink. That's two figures you run into a lot.
That's a hit.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. I learned about two drinks I knew nothing about, never knew existed, and now I know all about them.
Well, I hope you all learned something too, and thank you so much for listening. If you want to find us on social media, we are Neat Boozecast on Instagram. We are neattheboozecast@gmail.com. If you want to email us, ask us any questions. You can also join our Patreon. We've got rewards, we've got bonus content, all sorts of fun stuff over there. And if you want to talk about, I don't know, anything that we just mentioned or whatever, you can do that
at Neat the Boozecast group page on Facebook. We can discuss Crab Rangoon to go with your Pegu Club.
Why not?
When in Burma, do like the Burmese. That's what they say.
I don't think it's called Burma anymore.
Well, then I'll be lost. I'll be looking for Burma. I'll have to find Hemingway. Maybe he can get me there.
I think this is all wrong. This is all absolutely wrong. Do not listen to anything this man says. All right. Hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
Me. You figure a Burmese python comes from Burma?
I don't know drink stuff.
Oh, a Burmese python is a snake.
Yes, I know it's a snake.
Well, you don't drink a snake. Not on purpose, anyway.
I said, I don't know, I know drink stuff.
Oh, I thought you said I don't know drink stuff.
No, you can drink a snake, but that's a whole other episode.
Okay.